We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Support for this podcast comes from U.S. Bank. When it's time for a new credit card, the best ones do way more than just buy stuff. And that's why U.S. Bank offers credit cards that make every day more rewarding. Earn cash back, score points when you shop, dine out, travel, or binge watch, or get a low intro APR. U.S. Bank credit cards were designed to fit your lifestyle. So make every day more rewarding and check out usbank.com/creditcard. U.S. Bank credit cards are issued by U.S. Bank National Association N.D. Some restrictions may apply. Member FDIC.
Napa know-how.
The Napa guy knows not to judge a man by his car's multicolor paint job or absence of modern gadgetry. Who cares if it's technically old enough to vote and the windows are powered by the strength of your left arm? Your monthly payment is zero, and it'll stay that way. Because with over 500,000 parts and a little Napa know-how, you can keep anything on the road. She may not be pretty, but she's all yours. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
Geico presents sharing versus oversharing. Yesterday, Cliff Sora shared a top 10 list of hot fusion restaurants, a vegan gluten-free mashup recipe, and a podcast featuring organic food trends. Oh, TMI, too much internet information. That's oversharing. Cliff, Geico has something worth sharing with your friends. Like how on geico.com you could save hundreds on your car insurance, update your policy, and report a claim. Gluten-free info that's easy to swallow. Geico, 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Welcome to the RotoWire Fantasy Football Podcast, brought to you by DraftKings.com, the leader in daily fantasy sports. You can use the promo code RotoWire when you deposit on DraftKings, and that'll get you a free contest entry today. Wednesday, October 21st, the year 2015. Nick Whalen here, joined as I always am on Wednesdays by Mike Doria. Mike, another week in the NFL, another Pats win in the NFL, and another Jaguars loss. So just another normal week for us.
Well, we're back to the future today. Today's the old back to the future thing. When I first saw that movie before you were born, it seemed like so long before the October 21st, 2015 day would arrive. And here we are. And it's another routine week 7 in the NFL for us. Not everything came true, you know, that movie portrayed, but there's a lot of things in the they were talking about this on ESPN today. A lot of the things in the NFL that they do seem like they're not from the future.
No, very know? True. You're not going to like this, and I neglected to tell anybody this in the office today, but I've never seen Back to the Future. As you know, I don't watch many movies. I am somewhat of the Michael Jordan of not watching movies.
I'll spare you the great ways. Scott in Christopher Lloyd voice exclamation, but
thank you.
Great Scott. That's
I know. This is up there, you know, and people ask what movies I've seen or, you know, bring up a movie and ask if I've seen it. The answer is almost always no. And yeah, this is one that usually elicits the what? Oh,
it's,
you've not
it's
seen
classic,
that?
It's iconic. There's even a little sports angle that sort of predating fantasy sports. Marty finds the almanac and wins a bunch of money betting on sports, you know.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's something about the Cubs, right? As you can imagine, for me, this has been a very confusing day to be on the internet because people are making all these memes and all these references, and I just kind of nod and pretend.
They didn't really talk about football in Back to the Future, but the 2015 World Series was portrayed as the Cubs winning over the Miami franchise. Now, people got
was
a little...
there even a Miami franchise back then? I'm looking this up.
No,
this came out in 1985.
That was a futuristic franchise call.
Oh,
there.
Good foresight.
Yeah, there's lots of that stuff. But, you know, unless the Cubs rally here and it's not looking good, they're down 3-0. They're down in the game. Unless they pull Theo Epstein back from 3-0, epic comeback number 2, it's not gonna come to fruition.
No, and it would be great, I think, to get another repeat of the 04 Red Sox. I know you're a big Red Sox guy, so maybe you don't want that. Maybe you want that to kind of live on as the comeback in baseball,
you know,
and maybe in sports.
I wouldn't mind seeing the Cubs win. They've suffered long enough.
They have. But as we record here, they just fell behind 4-0 in the first inning. So things not looking up for the Cubs. Maybe as we look back on this podcast.
I think we can accurately predict that they're not going to win this game or this series. And I guess the focus of this podcast is to be more accurate than some of the Back to the Future predictions, and with that in mind, let's rock on the injury.
Yeah, enough
report.
Baseball talk. You know, before we get into the injuries, as we always like to remind you, the podcast and all of our RotoWire podcasts are available on iTunes. They're available on Stitcher. You can get them directly from the RotoWire website. If you just go to rotowire.com/podcast, you can stream and download MP3 files there. Very easy to do, and you know that makes it basically as easy as possible for you to get them on whatever device you like and listen to them at your convenience. Before we get into the injuries for each team, just a reminder, the teams on bye this week, Cincinnati, Denver, and Green Bay, all three undefeated teams right now. So if you're in survivor pools or pick 'em pools, some of the teams that you've probably been riding these first 6 weeks, not available. So that should make things interesting. And then the Chicago Bears are the final team on bye in week 7. Looking ahead to week 8, Jacksonville and Buffalo will be on bye next week. They're, of course, the London game this week. And that's how the NFL likes to do that, give them that extra week after the long trip back to the States, and then Philadelphia and Washington.
Yeah, and with that in mind, Nick, it's just whether or not we talk about it specifically regarding the players, but teams heading into the bye, if there's a player that's a little banged up and there's any question regarding that player's health, a lot of times teams will sort of take that bye into account there and maybe go cautious and let the player rest a little longer. So you're looking at Buffalo, Philadelphia, Washington, and Jacksonville. Names that come to mind, DeSean Jackson, maybe Sammy Watkins, perhaps T.J. Yeldon. I don't have a good feel on T.J. Yeldon, but we'll get there. But that's just a general point to remember. Always know not only who is on bye this week, but who's on bye next week, because it can definitely affect the strategy of coaches in terms of whether or not to rest a player to get them that much healthier.
All right, so let's get right to it. We'll start in the AFC East. The New England Patriots, fresh off that win over Indianapolis on Sunday night. The glorious victory. I think the play that Indianapolis tried on that fourth down is what really ended up stealing the show.
Yeah, the theme music from the Benny Hill show. That was.
Do
just...
I even have, what is the Benny Hill show?
Well, I think many of our listeners out there probably have that on their iPod, but it is it's the kind of music that you expect to see when there's some ridiculously chaotic Keystone Cop-esque action happening, and it was one of those things that before I even figured out what was going on, the Colts had already, you know, messed it up in quite humorous fashion. I mean, obviously they were trying to get the Patriots to move, maybe you know, get a penalty call or something like that. But it was just comical.
It absolutely was. And I don't often find myself laughing out loud during NFL football games, and even as a Jaguars fan, but that was something else. That took things definitely to another level. And like
right,
we said,
and it was a very deflating thing for the Colts.
Oh, wow. Yeah, unbelievable. I need some sort of like slide whistle sound effect for that one. But looking at the Patriots' injuries as they now move into Week 7, they're undefeated, as are those three teams on bye that we mentioned earlier. They host the New York Jets, the one loss. New York Jets, that's a noon game on Sunday. Deion Lewis, limited in practice on Wednesday. Sounds like he's leaning toward playing, maybe more of a rest day than anything else. He led the Patriots' backs with 39 snaps on Sunday night against Indianapolis. LeGarrette Blount, of course, in that mix as well.
Yeah, I mean, Deion Lewis, he was limited today. I think that was just kind of routine. I mean, as I've mentioned a few times, the Patriots are not inflating their injury report just yet. But the beat writers were speculating that that Lewis was a little bit limited in that game. Like you said, he had the 39 snaps compared to LeGarrette Blount's 29. But I think we've sort of, the pecking order in the Patriots' backfield is pretty well established, where Lewis is getting plenty of catches, plenty of looks in the passing game. But LeGarrette Blount is definitely, the primary ball carrier there. And the excitement over Deion Lewis at the beginning of the year when he was getting the majority of the carries, he's still very usable in PPR formats, but Blount is doing the heavy lifting, and essentially Deion Lewis is kind of, he's turned into the Shane Vereen, the 2015 edition, a good PPR guy, and then Blount's a good guy, in yardage TD heavy leagues, and,
right?
And again, Lewis, there's no doubt he's playing this week unless there's some unexpected setback there.
Right, and ever since LeGarrette Blount has come back, Lewis has been maybe a little bit more valuable as a receiver, a PPR guy, like you said. And, oftentimes you look at some backfields where there's a split with two or three guys and you kind of want to avoid it. But as good as this New England offense has been, I'm still pretty comfortable rostering both of these guys most weeks, are you?
Well, like I said, Lewis in PPR formats, Blount in the other formats. And every once in a while the Patriots are going to throw you that curveball where Lewis gets all the carries and Blount gets none. But in general, I think it works well with their offense to have the power guy and then the pass catcher out of the backfield. Another thing that there's a couple things to mention here, guys that are not technically on the injury report. Julian Edelman is not listed on the injury report, but anybody who saw that game could see that he had a finger issue. Definitely affected him on a few passes. One indirectly led to a touch, or actually directly. led to a touchdown there. But the Patriots weren't going to punish him for that. He's just too valuable in their offense. And even though the Boston Herald was saying that finger's been a little goofy there for a while, he's not on the injury report. He's going to play, and he's going to see plenty of targets. And looking a little bit ahead, as we touched on last week, Brandon LaFell is eligible to come off the PUP list this week. I'm not sure that he will, probably not. But there's a guy that if he's sitting around the waiver wire in your league, he's going to, if healthy, reclaim that number two Patriots wideout job, which led to some pretty good numbers for Danny Amendola in week six. So Brandon LaFell did the job last year, surprised a lot of people in fantasy. And because he was on the PUP list, he's probably out there as a free agent in a lot of leagues.
Yeah, definitely a guy to keep an eye on and a guy that, in most leagues, a lot of people have probably forgotten about. So if you can get him on the waiver wire early, definitely a guy to target. The Buffalo Bills, they play the London game, as we mentioned, this week. They're already over in London. I think they got over there on Monday. It sounds like Jacksonville's not getting there until Friday, which seems like a pretty odd idea to me.
Missing out on the fish and chips upside that London provides.
Well, there's that and just, the time change, things like that. But, hey, I'm not the Jaguars travel coordinator.
Yeah, that's a good point. I'm thinking about the fish and chips because it's
here. I love fish
and
chips.
It's dinner time in Madison, and I'm thinking about the fish and chips, and you're correctly thinking about the time difference, which is something that we almost never talk about. But that's something that, the players leave Sunday or Monday, and they just have a few days for their bodies to adjust to that. And it's, anyone who's traveled overseas knows that it's not always the easiest thing to overcome. So the NFL is definitely, you know, at the expense of the players' routines and bodies. You know, it's they're doing the London thing. It's obviously economically motivated.
But I don't know if you're sending them the possible EJ Manuel led Bills versus the Jaguars. I don't know if that's the matchup you want to spark interest in London, but it is nice to see them. I mean, it's the second London game of the year. Jacksonville, I think, is signed on to play there for at least, you know, five or ten more years.
Jacksonville is kind of like the Detroit Lions Thanksgiving thing, where, you know, Jacksonville is the London thing.
It's like, we can't be Jacksonville's team, maybe we can be London's team.
I mean, Rex Ryan, I guess they just figured that would bring some entertainment right. to that table.
Will be an entertaining matchup. I think maybe if Tyrod Taylor, he's the first guy we'll talk about on the injury report. He was limited on Wednesday, pretty much 50-50 it sounds like right now. He did make the trip with the Bills. You know, if he doesn't play, this game maybe even gets a little bit more interesting from a competition standpoint, just with how bad Jacksonville's looked lately.
Well, yeah, you got to wake up early in the morning.
I think it's an 8:30 Central time start.
Yeah, so the inactives are going to come in, I guess, at 7 o'clock Central. So that's like 8 a.m. You know, Eastern time. So if you're considering anyone like Taylor, you're gonna have to get up at the crack of dawn for a Sunday. I mean, for some people that's no big deal, but I know that there's going to be a 5-something on my alarm clock this Sunday as I roll into HQ, and hopefully I'll write some good coherent notes about that. But, Tyrod Taylor, you know, limited in practice today, splitting the snaps with EJ Manuel. Don't have a great sense of whether or not he's going to play or not. That should reveal itself over the next couple of days. I think by Friday we'll have a pretty good idea of who's getting the nod. But Tyrod Taylor, there was talk about, you know, if Manuel does well in his place, that he could assume the job. But I just think that was just some chatter.
Yeah, I have a hard time believing that. I think if he plays like really, really well, maybe that chatter gets a little bit louder. But at the same time, it's kind of an odd situation playing in London. They're playing the Jaguars. You know, it'd be one thing if they were matched up against, you know, a much better team this week and EJ Manuel played well and led them to a win. But I just don't know how much you can take away, you know, from a game against Jacksonville in London. And like I said, in kind of odd circumstances. Two more guys we're taking a look at from the Bills. Carlos Williams did not make the trip over to London, so he's obviously ruled out unless he's taken his own means of transportation over there. I mean, maybe he's going to hop on the Jags plane.
Rex Ryan, there were several Bills that didn't make the trip, and Rex Ryan specifically said that they're not ruled out. So I guess, you know, they could hop on the Concorde if such a thing exists and get over there and play. But, yeah, you can pretty much rule out Carlos Williams. Percy Harvin as well. He was dealing with a hip injury, but the reason stated for his absence now is a personal non-injury related thing. So hopefully everything's okay with him, but he's not going to be playing this week. Sammy Watkins is another guy who's a little bit banged up there, or actually very banged up. And I mean, along with Taylor, he's a guy that you know, especially Watkins. It just seems that in order to maybe get him right, you know, with a bye, looking ahead at a bye in week 8. They'll probably err on the side of, you know, caution there. And that'll lead to maybe some extra targets for Charles Clay, maybe Robert Woods, even Chris Hogan, if you're digging deep at the wideout position in anticipation of Watkins probably being out there.
Miami Dolphins, they host Houston. That's a noon game. Very, very noon-heavy slate this week. I guess you kind of have an anomaly with
that
one
routine.
With that one London game. Only two late games. I guess maybe that's the... That's the thing that's a little odd. I think they basically pulled one of the late games to make it the London game. So, yeah, not a lot of choice if you're watching those two late games. But we'll get to those later. Kenny Stills, limited on Wednesday for Miami with a back injury. Sounds like he's leaning toward playing. And the other note for the Dolphins, Jay Ajayi, the rookie out of Boise State. He's been on short-term IR with a rib injury. He's expected to begin practicing this week, but, you know, remember, he can't be back until week 9 because of that short-term IR designation.
Yeah, I mean, that's a guy that a lot of people were fired up about before he got placed on the short-term IR. And, I mean, Lamar Miller has definitely – he's the lead back. And you know, they still won't give him more than 19 carries. Since 2013, that's his high. And he did that last week. So really, you're just trying to know who his backup is right now. At the moment, it looks like Jonas Gray may have kind of supplanted Damian Williams. But, I mean, I think that, you know, depending on injuries and just depending on how Ajayi looks. He supposedly looked good in practice today. He could eventually sort of assume that number two role, and somehow down the stretch, he might actually make a fantasy splash. It wouldn't surprise me. I mean, he looked good in college, you know, and there was that talk of the knee issue, that a pre-existing condition that could affect him in the future type thing led him to fall in the draft. But I'm interested to see what he can do once he finally gets on the field for the Dolphins.
Yeah, absolutely. I think he's a pretty high upside guy, and you know, you have to wonder, with missing half the season, by the time he's able to come back, you know, how much they're going to be willing to integrate him right away. Definitely not worth a flyer, I would say, on the waiver wire right away in week 9. But you know, if he proves it right away, you know, if they prove right away, I guess that he's going to be in that rotation, I think he could be worth a look by week 10 or 11.
A little bit of a high upside roster stash. I mean,
yeah.
Do you if you're sitting there with Damian Williams on your bench, maybe?
Yeah,
maybe cycle that out or something like
right,
that.
Right, right. If you have a position like that, for sure. The New York Jets, they're at New England. That's a noon game. Chris Owusu, limited with a knee injury. Wednesday, he had that knee scoped a couple weeks ago, so he's back at practice on a limited basis. Sounds like he's going to be questionable this week.
Yeah, he could get himself into the number three wideout mix there. But right now, it's Brandon Marshall and Eric Decker, the top two targets there. Bilal Paul, he's a little iffy this week, but... You know, Chris Ivory, as long as that guy stays healthy, they're just going to give him the ball. But if Bilal Powell is unable to go, and I guess if you're like really digging deep into PPR format, maybe Zach Stacy takes some of that change of pace work, but that's a bit of a reach there.
Yeah, I think they're all climbing aboard the Chris Ivory train at this point, and for good reason. One last note, not an injury, but Quincy Enunwa, kind of a reserve receiver, I guess, just 8 catches on the season. He did have a 10-target game earlier in the year against Philadelphia, however. Quincy Enunwa was suspended 4 games, personal conduct policy. He did only have 2 catches last game against Washington, but, you know, a guy that if for some reason you had your eye on him on the waiver wire, probably want to take your eye off him for at least the next 4 weeks. All right, let's turn now to the AFC North. The Pittsburgh Steelers, they're at Kansas City. That's a noon game on Sunday. Ben Roethlisberger, the big name we're keeping an eye on here, limited at practice Wednesday. Sounds like he's kind of trying to increase his activity, test out that knee a little bit. But I think the general perception is still that this is going to be a start for Landry Jones this Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, you keep on hearing that it's a long shot that Big Ben starts. I mean, if anyone's going to, like, you know, go against the odds and maybe pull a surprise start, it's him. But, you know, I think he's an important enough player that they don't want to, you know, rush him back out there and expose him to, further hits when he's, you know, he's not necessarily the most mobile quarterback to begin with. And if he's like statue in the pocket with a bulky brace, I don't care how big and tough he is. It's not a good idea to throw him out there. And Landry Jones, to be fair, you know, he played well enough in relief of Mike Vick last week. And Vick is dealing with a hamstring injury that kind of essentially eliminates him from the starting conversation this week.
So it would be kind of interesting, you know, and obviously, you know, Landry Jones never gets his opportunity to finish that game. He went 8 of 12, 2 touchdowns, 168 yards as they beat Arizona. But you kind of have to wonder, with Mike Vick wasn't super effective as a replacement to Ben Roethlisberger. And you got to wonder if both guys were equally healthy, who they would end up going with. Landry Jones, a guy who started 4 years at Oklahoma, not very experienced at the NFL level. I mean, the 12 attempts that he had against Arizona were his first 12 attempts of his NFL career. But, you know, as ineffective as Michael Vick was, you know, a lot of checkdowns, was able to do a couple things with his legs, especially late in that game against San Diego to get them down the field. You kind of have to wonder who they would have leaned toward. But, you know, with Vick having that little tear in his hamstring, it sounds like if Ben Roethlisberger isn't going to go, like we said, sounds like a long shot right now, that it's going to be Landry Jones. How, if you're looking at this from the perspective of Antonio Brown, Martavis Bryant, Marcus Wheaton, Le'Veon Bell, are you backing off those guys at all this week?
Well, you take a look at the box score, and Martavis Bryant, in his first game back from his suspension after he was deactivated the week before, he actually caught 2 touchdown passes once Landry Jones went in the game. I'm not saying that, you know, that's the kind of chemistry that is sustainable, but obviously they got on the same page, and I mean, there's a little bit of upside there for Martavis Bryant, who had ended up with 6 catches, 137 yards, 2 TDs, again, both from Jones. Antonio Brown, 8 targets, 3 catches for 24 yards. It's really tough to bench a guy like that. He's probably your first or second round draft pick. In the daily conversation, though, you know, he's maybe not going to be worth his salary this week. But as soon as Big Ben comes back, I think that is order is going to be restored there. Marcus Wheaton, another quiet week, another. I mean, he just did not take advantage of his opportunity. Now Bryant's back. You know, he might catch some passes here and there, but he needs an injury to happen. And even if that happens, he didn't really do much with it, you know, the first portion of the season there. But Martavis Bryant, I mean, that guy looks great. And, you know, didn't really show any rust. You know, I was a little bit little bit worried that he'd sustain that minor knee issue that kept him out of the first week that they could have brought him back. But obviously he's fine.
Yeah, he looked excellent, especially in that 88-yard long TD that accounted for most of his yardage and most of Landry Jones's as well. But, you know, it all counts when we're talking fantasy. Baltimore Ravens, they're at Arizona. That's a Monday night game. Justin Forsett did not practice on Wednesday, basically in the same situation that he was in last week. Of course, he ended up playing. Dennis Pitta, a name we really haven't heard from in a while, a guy that, you know, has talked about maybe going to have a career-ending injury with that hip issue. Sounds like he's going to try to get back to practice this week. He's been on the PUP list. I mean, a guy that was very productive when healthy, but you just got to wonder how effective he can be coming off of such a serious injury.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely wait-and-see territory there. I mean, there's definitely going to be plenty of tight end churn, you know, over the next few weeks with buys and everything. Maybe he enters the fantasy equation down the road, but that's I'll believe it when I see it. I mean, I certainly hope that he is able to come back from that injury. It certainly looked like his career might be in danger. Definitely a season, so it's encouraging that they're talking about him maybe giving it a try. But I mean, I think that's kind of how it went last year, and then that didn't really work out too well. So again, you know, good luck to him, but nothing to count on right away there.
Right, and I think that's a big reason that they went out and got Max Williams in the draft. I don't think they're certainly not planning for Dennis Pitta to be back to, you know, the Dennis Pitta that we saw from 2010 to 2013. Only played in three games last season, suffering that hip injury against Cleveland back in week three. So, yeah, I mean, a guy, like you said, wait and see. Definitely not somebody you want to be scrambling to go and get by any means.
And we're gonna get more on the Ravens injury report as well as the Cardinals there on Thursday. The Ravens did have some activities today, enough for us to mention that Forsett didn't practice. But he didn't practice a couple days last week, and he ended up, you know, seeing most of the touches there. Got involved in the passing game, and, you know, I was a little skeptical that he'd be able to keep it up this year. But he, when healthy, he's been doing it. And Steve Smith
just continues to be Steve Smith. I'm no longer surprised by anything this man does.
I mean, just saying microfractures in the back kind of like makes me like sore.
It makes me think, hey, I'm going to go play an NFL football game and dominate.
Yeah, and, you know, he came back, stepped right back in with the heavy targets, caught a bunch of passes. He's Steve Smith, and earlier on this podcast we were talking about how he's planning on hanging up his cleats after this year, and you know, I don't doubt his sincerity there, but man, I wouldn't mind seeing him play another year.
No, absolutely not, especially at the level that he's been able to keep playing at this season. The Cleveland Browns, they're at St. Louis, another noon game. Duke Johnson, not listed on the injury report. He, of course, played last season. Last week. He's a part of that three-back system. I talked about that with DVR on the podcast on Monday. We both like Duke Johnson as kind of the highest upside guy of those three, but
well, he gets involved in the passing
game, right,
and
that's the thing.
Easiest you know, advantage that he has over the other guys. I mean, Crowell had 11 carries last week. Johnson had 9. Robert Turbin, you know, former Seahawk, came off an ankle injury. Actually got 10 carries. Didn't do a whole lot with them, but he's involved enough to complicate things for Carell and Johnson owners. But fortunately for Johnson owners, he does catch the passes, and that gives him some upside in PPR formats, definitely.
Gary Barnage, a guy who's really broken out this season at the tight end position, pretty much out of nowhere. I see you shaking your head, and I feel the same way. He was a limited participant on Wednesday with an ankle injury. Any comments on Gary Barnage?
Well, I'm kind of angry that I didn't pick him up in any leagues. Even though he had a kind of a breakout game earlier in the season, I just decided he was going to be like, one and done.
I think his name alone like deters me and probably a lot of other people from like buying into him. Like, I just have a hard time believing a guy named Gary Barnidge could be successful in the NFL in 2015.
I don't have a problem with his name, but if you just look, you know, if such a thing as a Gary Barnidge football card existed in this office, you'd look at the back of his card, you'd see his age, you'd see like, yeah, the most catches he's ever had in his career is 13, and he's like 30 years old. He plays for the Browns. You know, there just didn't seem to be any sort of built-in upside there. You know, maybe when he was younger, I don't really remember any Gary Barnidge buzz when he was entering, you know, the NFL. You know, as there it tends to be with like unproven players, you know, there's the excitement of the unknown. But after a few years of not doing much, this is just like finding like a $20 bill on the ground, you know.
Yeah, right. In a lot of ways, the guy was a fifth round pick of Carolina in 2008, coming out of Louisville. So I believe that would have placed him on those good Brian Brohm teams that had so much success back when Louisville was kind of dominating the Big East for a little bit there. Spent the 2009 season with Carolina, was out of the league, came back to Carolina in 2012, and then, you know, of course, resurfaced with Cleveland in 2013. He has 27 receptions for 413 yards through six games this season. Both of those are far and away career highs. He's basically already set. He basically like eclipsed his career high in every category by like week three
the catches.
This season.
I mean, looking at the stats today, I think he's number three in yardage and tied for second with five TDs. Mm-hmm. So, you know, like at the beginning of the year, we were like talking about, you know, you got to get Gronkowski or Kelce. Otherwise, you know, there's just a huge drop off. But, you know, anyone who lucked into Gary Barnidge, at least, you know, the production that he's, you know, put out to date, that's just a really nice bonus. Although I'm guessing that a lot of people didn't really have faith to, you know, put him in the lineup until after he did it for a couple of weeks. But right now he's definitely, you know, more reliable than a lot of the bigger names. You know, like
has as many catches for first downs as Rob Gronkowski.
Well,
Gronk's also played one fewer game, which
that's,
is worth noting.
Yeah, there you go. That's about the only time that those two guys should ever really be in the same sentence.
Okay.
But you know, there's a lot of guys like, you know, Vernon Davis and, you know, just a bunch of...
The household names, guys maybe who are bigger names than their stats have suggested.
The Kyle Rudolphs of the world.
Right, exactly.
And just, you know, there's guys in the league, you know, like Greg Olsen and Kelce, as we mentioned, that are getting it done. And Jimmy Graham kind of had a good week finally this week. But, man, when you look at the stats, it's like you're like, whoa, what's Gary Barnidge doing with Jimmy Graham's stats?
Right. Yeah, exactly. I mean, is he the biggest breakout guy real quickly for you this season? I think it's like it's got to be like between him and Devontae Freeman at this point, right? I mean, there are maybe a couple other names you can include. But those two, as far as coming out of nowhere to really be elite guys at their position so far.
I mean, at least with Devontae Freeman, last year there was a little bit of excitement when he was a rookie. You know, between injuries and everything and Tevin Coleman coming in, there just wasn't very much. People weren't really looking at him as a high upside guy. Coleman had some injuries, and then he just, you know, literally took the job and ran with it. Whereas Barnidge was just not even on the radar. No one in their wildest imagination would have guessed that he would be a guy that we're talking about for probably about as much time as we usually spend talking about either the Jaguars, Patriots, or
NFL
football
jerseys. Blaine Gabbert finishing out the AFC North. Cincinnati, like we said, is on a bye week, so we'll check in with them next week. AFC South, hey, speak of the devil, the Jacksonville Jaguars, the first team we'll speak of here. They're technically the home team, so they're willing to give up a home game, apparently, to play in London. They face the Buffalo Bills, as we said. TJ Yeldon did not practice, has not practiced as of Wednesday. That groin issue kept him out of the game against the Houston Texans on Sunday. That was a loss. Blake Bortles was the leading rusher in that game for Jacksonville. So if you put your faith in Denard Robinson, who was coming back for that knee injury, or Toby Gerhart, who was, I guess, technically the featured back. He was
the starter, and he actually had more carries than Denard Robinson.
Right.
So
have it. We use the term featured back very, very lightly on the RotoWire Football Podcast. But yeah, like I said, Blake Bortles, the leading rusher in this game. Toby Gerhart, Denard Robinson, really unable to get anything going. if Yeldon can't go again, I think we'll probably end up seeing a similar split. You know, maybe Bortles doesn't lead the team in rushing, but I'm not looking for an explosive performance against this Buffalo front.
Well,
you think
that Denard Robinson, you know, now in his second game back, might be able to do a little bit more, especially, you know, in the passing game. But, yeah, neither of those guys really, you know, ran with it. And, you know, the Bills, it's not really an optimal matchup for running backs anyway, so... As long as there's like any sort of timeshare there, and that's where it probably would go if Yeldon isn't able to go. What's your take on Yeldon, though? What do you think his chances of suiting up this week are?
You know, I guess the fact that they are making the trip so late in the week makes it a little bit more difficult to discern. You know, we just talked about the Bills and, you know, guys like Percy Harvin not making the trip over there. You know, we can all but rule them out. With Yeldon, we might have to wait until Friday to see when that plane leaves. You know, if he doesn't make the trip, then obviously he's not going to play, and they might even bring him over there.
Well, they're going to be headed over there before that, though, right?
I believe I read that they were going on Friday.
Wow.
Which, like I said, I could be wrong on that, but I'm pretty certain that's what I heard. I'm assuming maybe they arrive Friday. I don't know exactly how the time changes work there, but...
We won't bicker over the Jags itinerary there.
No.
But yeah, it's... You know, back to that point where we were saying that if the guy's like a little bit more on the questionable side than probable, and the team is going to be on bye next week, it's maybe not the worst idea to try to, like, you know, save him for week eight. Especially that's the kind of injury that's really easy to aggravate. You can test it out in practice, but groins and hamstrings. You know, that's the kind of thing that's easily aggravatable, if such a word exists.
So I searched Jaguars flying to London, and Syracuse.com, a local paper in the Syracuse area near the Buffalo area, has an article entitled "Why a Sleep Specialist Thinks the Buffalo Bills Will Beat the Jaguars in London."
Nice.
And here's an excerpt here. According to a sleep specialist that spoke to Yahoo Sports, the Bills have a huge edge on the Jaguars because they arrived in London on Monday morning, while Gus Bradley elected to have the Jaguars fly overnight Thursday and arrive Friday morning. And here's a quote from W. Christopher Winter of the Oklahoma City Thunder. I'm assuming he's the sleep specialist here. He says, quote, "They'll have a lead of 4 days? Bet the farm on Buffalo. That's absurd. Why did the Jaguars do that?"
Yeah, like when you said that, Nick, I didn't want to, like, you know, disagree with you there. I just assumed that they wouldn't do anything that foolish. You know, it takes the body at least a few days, ideally a week, to adjust to, you know, anything more than a couple hours time difference. And that's more than a couple hours time difference.
That's quite a few hours. I was in Indiana, in northwestern Indiana this past week, and just on the border of where the time changes to the Eastern time zone. And even that was, you know, 1 hour time change was tough to grapple with. So obviously going to London is much, much larger. And, you know, I don't know if I'd put too much stock into, you know, I wouldn't necessarily bet the farm, as the article indicates, on Buffalo, but it is certainly an advantage. And, you know, as we're talking about it from an injury perspective, you know, if you have to wait out on a guy like Yeldon, we might not know until Friday or Saturday.
Well, you know, like, there's a lot of athletes, I'm not just athletes, but people are creatures of habit. And, you know, if you're used to going to work at a certain time, and suddenly your schedule gets, you know, turned upside down, and that's essentially what's happening here. You can't take it for granted that these guys are just, you know, such amazing, you know, in such amazing physical shape and conditioning that they can just instantly convert to a different time zone there.
Right. Well, and especially the Jaguars, I mean, they need every advantage they can get at this point.
Yeah. Some people are affected more by it than others, but it just seems illogical that the Jaguars would put themselves in a position where that's something that we're even talking about. I mean, I'm sure that they thought, yeah, red eye, that's a good idea. The guys get to sleep on the plane. We don't lose any time that way.
Yeah, there's something to be said about the comfortability of practicing at your own facility throughout the week, maybe something along those lines, but still very odd.
I hope they have good seats on that on the flight over.
Hopefully it's not a commercial flight. That very popular direct flight from Jacksonville to London, I'm sure that so many people are hopping on. The receivers, you know, the usual suspects popped up on the injury report for Jacksonville this week. Robinson.
Don't tell me Marquise Lee is on the injury report.
Mike, believe it or not, Marquise Lee is on the injury report, and believe it or not, it's a hamstring injury. He was held out again this past week. He hasn't played since the New England game in week three. Better news, Allen Robinson looks to be fine. He suffered what looked to be a pretty bad leg injury in that game, ended up leaving for a little bit. Turns out it's just a bad bruise, but the expectation is that he's going to play. Allen Hurns did not practice on Wednesday.
That's getting to be a bit routine.
So. It is, right. And yeah. You know, same scenario the last 2 weeks, I believe, for him. He ended up playing, had another touchdown, a little bit of a quiet day yardage-wise. Did see his normal target numbers, which is nice, just kind of unable to hook up with Blake Bortles.
Tell me about your leading receiver last week and, you know,
oh, geez, Brian Walters.
Yeah.
I do not even know where to begin with Brian Walters. That kind of came out of nowhere. I mean, this was a game where Jacksonville, you know, fell behind fairly early in the second half. Blake Bortles turned the ball over left and right. Three picks for him in this game. But, yeah, Brian Walters ended up being the leading receiver in this game. 8 catches, 87 yards on 12 targets. That was second only to Julius Thomas. He's also on the injury report. He's not on the injury report this week.
Well, he's fine. He's practicing fully, I believe.
Right, he was on the injury report yesterday. They said he came out of that game with bruised ribs, but yeah. Sounds like he's going to be all right. But, yeah, I would stay away from Brian Walters for now. I think this is a pretty crowded receiving core.
Yeah,
you can't often say that about a bad team like Jacksonville, but there is a lot of talent at receiver, and I think Brian Walters is pretty low.
You know, as we discussed, whether or not, in real terms, he's doing a great job, Blake Bortles is putting up some, you know, kind of fantasy-friendly numbers there quietly. You know, people are just, you know, they talk about the Jags and they don't really think of a passing offense that can generate much in the way of fantasy value. But, he keeps on rattling off these 300-yard games. I mean, I guess part of it is that they're behind a lot. But,
right.
You know, you get a yard is a yard, man.
Yeah, exactly. And he's been a monster. You know, if your league doesn't penalize much for interceptions, I think Blake Bortles has probably been among the top quarterbacks, probably top 10 quarterbacks in that league. Bernard Pierce, not listed on the injury report. He was held out with a concussion. That was suffered in the Jaguars' previous game.
Oh, you were talking about that last week.
We were. Yeah. Initially I was joking about it. He had that play that kind of went viral. He was blocking for the wrong team on a punt return, and then it turned out that, hey, this guy's concussed, and maybe that had something to do with it. So it went from funny to not funny pretty quickly, but it sounds like this maybe wasn't too severe of a concussion. The fact that, you know, he only missed 1 week and he's not listed on Wednesday is certainly a good sign. Probably not a guy you want to ride too heavily in any leagues whatsoever as the third back behind Toby Gerhardt and Denard Robinson. The Tennessee Titans, they host one loss, Atlanta. Atlanta took that first loss of the season on Thursday night against New Orleans last week. That's a noon game. Harry Douglas did not practice. He's a backup receiver. And Marcus Mariota did not practice on Wednesday. He, of course, has a sprained MCL, took that low hit from the Dolphins' Olivier Vernon. I don't know if you've had a chance to see the highlight of this hit. I thought it looked like Vernon fell into him a little bit. Vernon ended up being fined on Tuesday for the hit, which, you know, I think the league needs to do what they can to protect their quarterbacks, especially their young quarterbacks. But still, I didn't think this was a super malicious hit as far as those type of hits go.
The coach had a beef about it, and, you know, maybe the NFL paid attention to that. But fortunately, it's not a long-term injury, and it's actually to the point where even though Mariota didn't practice today, he says he feels that he has a pretty good chance of playing this weekend. I mean, I'm not completely sold on that notion. I mean, you don't want to like rush a, you know, number two pick overall franchise type quarterback there into action if he's not ready. But there does seem to be a legitimate chance that he is going to play this week. If not, it's Zach Mettenberger time. I guess in daily lineups, if you're looking, if Mariota would get scratched, you know, you can always like play that like dirt cheap quarterback strategy. But I don't know that I'm going to do that this week.
No. And, you know, like you said, Zach Mettenberger in line to get the start if Mariota can't go. I think they're going to do everything they can to have Mariota ready for this game. The Houston Texans are at Miami in a noon game. Arian Foster, another guy who's kind of just a routine inclusion on the injury
limited
list.
Limited every Wednesday. But,
you know, kind of the Tony Romo of the running back position when Romo was healthy, seemed to pop up every Wednesday as a limited participant, just trying to get him a little extra rest on that groin. Nate Washington practiced in full. He's missed the last two games. He's a guy, you know, Cecil Shorts, unlikely to play Sunday with a hamstring injury. Nate Washington has a chance to be the number two guy opposite DeAndre Hopkins in this offense.
Yeah, I mean, like, DeAndre Hopkins is going to get his 7,000 targets, and I would say that maybe Nate Washington has made a higher percentage play than the younger guys that, they were rolling with when both Shorts and Washington were out. That's Jalen Strong and Keith Mumphrey. So if you're scrambling for wideout help, you know, maybe Nate Washington is an option. Not a super high upside play there, you know, because Hopkins is the guy that they roll with. But yeah, there's definitely a lot. You know, I'm in a few leagues, and there's a few leagues that where like I'm just looking for anyone, you know, with a pulse to be my number three receiver, either due to injuries or bye weeks there.
The Indianapolis Colts, they are home against New Orleans in a noon game as they lick their wounds from that Sunday night loss to New England. No real injuries that we're keeping an eye on with them, but it sounds like Andrew Luck is going to be good to go going forward. He looked pretty good against New England and, you know, finally maybe shook the rust off a little bit after those two Hasselbeck starts.
You know, I guess the sorry to interrupt you there.
No, no, let's go ahead. That's it.
Yeah, wasn't sure if that was a period or a comma there.
More period than comma. Okay, maybe a little cool. Half.
Yeah, the only thing I kind of was, you know, wanted to interject there is that obviously Frank Gore is the lead back there, but you know they got Ahmad Bradshaw back, you know, re-signed him last week, and he's already back in the offense. He didn't do much, 4 carries for 8 yards, but he instantly took over that number two sort of change of pace back job. So I guess if something happens to Frank Gore, Ahmad Bradshaw is your guy. And he's a guy that has had lots of injuries over the years. But, you know, if healthy, he could be a nice little sneaky pickup there.
All right, let's move on to the AFC West. The Kansas City Chiefs play host to Pittsburgh in a noon game. This is a very interesting one. And, you know, as I was going through and making my pick'em picks earlier today, I don't know. I had to ask. I pulled the guys in the office and got a pretty mixed response on how this one's going to turn out. We'll start with the injuries. Jamaal Charles, obviously we know the story with him. He's done for the season. Jeremy Maclin, the big one for Kansas City. He did not practice on Wednesday with a concussion. Sounds like his status is very, very much up in the air at this point.
Yeah, I mean, it's too early in the week to know, but, I mean, he's definitely concussed. That was confirmed, you know, right after the game there. And that's a guy that they can't really afford to lose, especially after losing Charles. There was a lot of excitement in fantasy circles about Charkandrick West. And, yeah, he saw more snaps than Miles Davis. Miles Davis, yeah, the Jazz guy. yeah, Nile Davis. He saw more snaps than him, but neither of those guys really ran with the job. West had a fumble. I would imagine that he's going to hold on to the starting job, but I think it's going to be more of a continued timeshare there. And all those people that like spent their entire free agent budget on West are a little bit disappointed. But yeah, Maclin, if he's not able to go, I guess you're looking at Albert Wilson, maybe Chris Conley.
Not a lot of names that you love there.
Yeah, and that's when you get into the receivers with a pulse for 200. You know, if you're really looking for a deep dart in your number three slot, if your wideout core is banged up or dealing with bye weeks there.
All right, Denver Broncos are on bye, so the Oakland Raiders, they're at San Diego in the late game. The Raiders have been very healthy this season, a team we haven't really had to talk a whole lot about, but Latavius Murray.
He practiced fully today.
So practiced in full, so
he's good to go.
He was a guy we were kind of watching. Their injury report was a little bit later as far as when it came out publicly. Yeah. But
Tywan
sounds like he's
Jones,
gonna be fine.
Everybody, he's practicing fully. So I mean, that is a backfield where it's a little strange that the Raiders really just have Roy Helu and Tywan Jones backing up Latavius Murray. So you know that as long as he's healthy, he's going to keep on getting the carries. And it always struck me as a little bit strange that they didn't try to bolster their backfield depth, as the season went along. But you know, there's a bunch of guys still floating around. I think Pierre Thomas has, you know, had a bunch of tryouts, and I'm telling you, Nick, there's going to be like one random guy that gets signed in week 10 that like.
I think Ahmad Bradshaw might have been that guy. I think maybe he struck a little early this year.
Yeah, I mean. Frank Gore is tough, and I'm not saying that he's going to get an injury, but if something happened to Frank Gore, Bradshaw, why not?
All right, San Diego Chargers, as we finish out the AFC, they host Oakland. Again, that's a late game, one of the two late games on Sunday. Melvin Gordon did not practice on Wednesday. Minor ankle issue. Says he's, quote, good to play. The bigger question with him might be the fumble issues that got him benched for most of the second half against Green Bay last week. We saw a lot of Danny Woodhead, a little bit of Brandon Oliver sprinkled in there. How worried are you about those fumble issues affecting Gordon's workload?
I mean, two fumbles last week, four and 91 touches this year. That makes me want to ask you, to the best of your knowledge, what was his deal with fumbles while he was at Wisconsin?
He wasn't, a lockdown ball security guy, but he also wasn't, I don't think that was something that was hampering his draft stock by any means. You know, when he came out, I don't think that was a huge worry.
Yeah, like they're talking about that with Abdullah, but...
Right, Abdullah was the guy that was maybe more of a fumble liability, and that's kind of been the case so far with him, too. Both of these guys have had issues with that, but... You know, I mean, it's just one of those things, rookie running backs adjusting to the NFL. If there's anything that is going to keep you off the field when you're a high running back draft pick with so much invested in you, like Melvin Gordon has with the San Diego Chargers, it's putting the ball on the ground. And, you know, they have two other capable backs, albeit kind of specialists in Brandon Oliver and Danny Woodhead. But, you know, if Gordon's going to put the ball on the ground, I think they're not going to hesitate to go elsewhere.
I think all three of them ended up with seven carries last week against the Packers.
Right. I think Woodhead finished with, 8 yards on seven carries. Yeah. They kind of tried to use him in short yardage situations. That didn't quite work out.
I mean, if he gets the blocking, he can run. But he's, obviously a lot more dangerous as a pass catcher. He caught five passes for 63 yards. But they did not spend a first-round draft pick on Melvin Gordon to not have him carry the ball most of the time. So that's obviously going to be the plan going forward, but maybe this week there might be a little bit of a timeshare in play. Maybe if Gordon gets the hot hand, they'll let him run with it there. But I think he's in that kind of awkward, I got to make sure I protect the ball. And, he thinks about it every play, and then it sort of compounds itself by turning into kind of an overthinking issue. I mean, I read one of his quotes today, which said, I have to think about it every play, but I don't want to think about
it too
much.
That's almost not a good thing. You kind of like to think that the best backs, the best ball security backs in the league aren't thinking every time they get the ball, man, I better not fumble this. I think you got to get to a point where it just doesn't become an issue, and I think we'll get there eventually.
Yeah, maybe you should, look at some old Tiki Barber highlight films where, Barber was having some issues with fumbles a few years back, and then they coached him up on this, really exaggerated way of clutching the ball that did the job. But there's definitely times where guys that are dealing with fumbling issues, it gets inside their head and they start thinking so much about carrying the ball that they can't really pay attention to where the holes are and stuff. So it'll be interesting to see. I mean, the guy's got plenty of talent, but a little bit of a boomer bust pick this week in fantasy.
Yeah, absolutely. Antonio Gates did not practice with a knee injury. The report I read at least speculated that this is probably just a veteran's day off for him.
We're going to find out tomorrow. I mean, he's either going to be back at practice and no problem, or we put him on the injury radar if he doesn't return. Mm-hmm.
Two guys that are definitely still on the injury radar, Stevie Johnson, practiced in a limited fashion. First practice rep since week four, so he's missed the last two games. Kind of a questionable designation at this point. Keenan Allen did not practice on Wednesday. He was on fire before that hip injury. He went down with a hip pointer or hip flexor.
Yeah.
Just sucking up targets left and right.
Yeah, 15 targets.
Right, the Chargers just
catches.
Kept throwing it. Even after he went out of the game, they kept throwing it. But, yeah, Green Bay really didn't have an answer for him. He was working the middle. He was making nice catches along the sideline. Really kind of on pace for what might have been close to a record-setting day.
We were looking up at RotoWire HQ. We were looking up the how far he was away from the record. He had a ways to go, but he got hurt in the third quarter. So, if he hadn't got hurt, he at least might have made it interesting. At the pace he was going, and Phillip Rivers, he was getting a lot of yards there, and Antonio Gates was racking up the yards at tight end.
A lot of production to be had in that offense
Malcolm
on Sunday.
Floyd got in on the action.
Everybody. Yeah. Fantasy football just got a whole lot more interesting in week 7. DraftKings will be hosting another Millionaire Maker event. This time $1.2 million goes to first place. If you go to DraftKings.com now, you can enter the promo code ROTOWIRE. That'll allow you to play free with that first deposit on DraftKings.com. Again, the promo code is ROTOWIRE. That'll get you free entry now with your first deposit on DraftKings.com. This isn't fantasy as usual. This is DraftKings. Welcome to the big time. All right, so let's move on now to the NFC, Mike, and we'll start in the East. The Philadelphia Eagles are at Carolina in what is all of a sudden a pretty intriguing Sunday night game now. Carolina, that big win, big comeback win at Seattle on Sunday, coming off of their bye week. And in Philadelphia, a convincing win on Monday night at home over the Giants. So a very exciting Sunday night matchup this week. Nelson Agholor on the injury report for Philadelphia. He did not practice with the ankle. Hasn't practiced since getting hurt in week 5. We're not really sure what his status is. Probably leaning toward doubtful, I would think, at this point.
Well, yeah, we'll have to see. But in any case, even if he does play, wait and see is the word on him. You know, as much as I liked him, you know, coming out of the draft as kind of a logical, you know, replacement for Jeremy Maclin, until he gets a full and productive game in, I'd stay away. Riley Cooper's on the injury report. Had a decent game against the Giants, but, you know, I'm not super fired up about him as a fantasy option there.
We'll move to the Washington Redskins. They play host to Tampa Bay in a noon game. Matt Jones, the waiver wire darling of weeks 2 and 3, who really hasn't done a whole lot since then. He practiced in full. He had a toe injury. Expected to play this week. Do you anticipate him getting his value back to where it was? You know, after that, I think he had a big game. Maybe it was week 2.
Yeah, I'm a little bit leery about it.
I am too.
Chris Thompson, you know, was looking really good there as a sort of pass catcher, and also getting some carries. But he hurt his back this last week there, so he's a little iffy this week. And Alfred Morris, you would think that they would stick with him, but you know, he didn't have a great week 6, 11 carries for 21 yards. So yeah, you know, Jones is assuming he's healthy, he's going to get some carries, and if he starts getting hot, then yeah, maybe he can end up seeing more carries than Alfred Morris. But it's certainly not anything I would count on, and I would assume that not a best case scenario, but a most likely scenario is that it's a timeshare that continues to tilt in favor of Alfred Morris.
Big divisional matchup in the NFC East this weekend. One of the two late games on Sunday is Dallas at the New York Giants. We'll talk about these two teams together. We know Tony Romo is still going to be out. We know Matt Castle is going to be the starter this week. Dez Bryant is yet to practice this week. Jason Garrett basically said, you know, if he can practice, there's a chance he'll play. It sounds like this is an injury.
No,
that there's
a dumb and dumber, so you're saying it's a chance, I think.
Yeah, I know. I just, you know, if you're a Dez owner, do you even want him to play? You know, there's such a high risk for re-injury in these foot issues. I think just hold him out at least one more week.
You're a guy who covers the NBA a lot, and you see that these foot injuries, man, if you don't take care of them, if you don't...
It's not worth it.
Yeah.
It's like just not worth it.
For like 1 or 2 weeks to put a player in, you know, who's a franchise-type player, who's got a huge contract, who's, you know, a big part of their future... You know, you don't want to risk those guys for like a week. You know, even though the Cowboys are reeling, you know, they've lost a few games in a row, they could really stand to get some kind of spark there. But I think all along the plan has been kind of to just stay afloat, and then Romo and Bryant come in roughly at the same time or close to the same time, and get that last push there to hopefully get them in the playoff picture.
Right, and that's the thing about Dez Bryant. It's like, do you really want to rush him back so he can play with Matt Castle? You know, I think you certainly don't want to hold him out to match up the timeline with Romo if he is ready to get back. But if he's not 100%, I don't think there's any reason to force him back into a quarterback situation that isn't exactly favorable.
I mean, like, I think if he'd like practiced today and looked really good, then yeah, maybe I'd buy into it. But like, you're down to your last two practices. You haven't practiced for a while. And I realize that he's the kind of guy that typically doesn't need to practice to play, but we're talking about a guy that's coming back from surgery. We're not talking about a guy that just, you know, missed a game or two. It's going to take him a while to get up to speed, and you just don't want to mess with that kind of injury because it is so easy to aggravate if you rush back.
Right. Looking at the Giants side of this matchup, Ruben Randall limited during Wednesday's walkthrough. Of course, they played on Monday night, so they're a little bit behind most teams. Odell Beckham did not participate in the walkthrough, although he did say after Monday's game that he didn't suffer any setbacks. He said the hamstring felt pretty good, so sounds like there really shouldn't be any issue with him.
I think those guys, they were definitely more iffy last week than they are heading into this week. I mean, stating the obvious, they both played, but given that they didn't suffer any setbacks, given that they – you know, maybe weren't 100% on Monday, but they played enough snaps and, you know, to see a decent amount of targets. So I think they'll be fine this week, barring any unexpected setbacks there.
Right, and final note for the Giants, Victor Cruz, still not expected back this week as he continues to deal with that calf injury. Moving to the NFC North, Green Bay Packers are on a bye week. We can talk quickly about them. They should get Devontae Adams back after the bye, you would think. It sounded like there were some rumblings that he might play last week. They ended up holding him out. Turns out that's probably the right decision, yeah, as they were still able to get the win. They lost Ty Montgomery in that game against San Diego.
That doesn't sound too bad, though.
No, it looked worse than it was. I don't know if you were watching that game live as I was. He looked like he couldn't put any weight on it. He kind of got rolled up on.
You get that, like, oh, man, he's getting carted off, and he doesn't look happy. And, right. You know, doesn't look good, but
yeah.
Looks like the bye week is probably going to be all he needs, mm-hmm, and you've got the Eddie Lacy with a big question mark next to him.
Eddie Lacy ... question mark. And the reason for that is I don't know if he's injured or what happened on Sunday, but you know, James Starks ended up getting the brunt of the workload. Starks did only have 10 carries in this game. The yardage total looked quite a bit bigger because of a 65-yard touchdown run. But, you know, I think a lot of people were kind of panicking. A lot of Eddie Lacy owners were panicking after this game.
The way I look at it, and I think in the beginning of the year, and I don't know if I'm going to go dig into the archives of our podcast there, but I mentioned Eddie Lacy as a guy that I just was kind of staying away from for a few different reasons. Just didn't really like the way, you know, he's just a big guy, and, you know, I don't want to, like, you know, call him out for being out of shape or that, but, like, he kind of looks out of shape. And, you know,
Mike Doria calls out Eddie Lacy.
Mind you, you know, he's a big physical back, and, you know, that's part of his game. But more importantly, I thought to myself, well, this is a guy that, like, you know, he hurts people, he knocks people down, but, like, he just seems to be the kind of guy that puts himself in a position to be injured. And even though I don't think he was on the injury report this week, there's been whispers that he's still dealing with a little bit of a nagging ankle injury, and maybe that was part of it. But I guess to sort of maybe better answer your question, if you know about fantasy football, if you know about the Packers, if you know about the NFL, you know and assume that Eddie Lacy's the top guy, you know, he has been for a while now. But if you're watching your first NFL football game and you were looking at those two players, James Stark looked like the better back. More explosive, more energetic, more effective. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, going forward, how much of a timeshare that becomes. I mean, do they kind of keep Starks as kind of the complimentary change of pace guy, you know, insurance for Eddie Lacy, or does it become a timeshare? It's not like a lock that Eddie Lacy's going to immediately get the bulk of the carries back.
No, I don't think so either. I think the week of rest will kind of table this argument, I guess, for a week, and people maybe will start it back up next week. But I was able to go grab Starks in one of my shallower leagues. I think I had Thomas Rawls kind of riding on my bench after Lynch was back, and you know, I figure why not? I think the upside is certainly there. Like you said, he certainly looked like the better back. He's a little bit quicker.
And that's not the first time I've noticed that.
No, not at all.
Even in the past.
No. I mean, he was the guy during that Super Bowl run, you know, 3-4 years ago, whenever that was. And you know, I think they'll definitely keep him around as a change of pace back at the least. I wouldn't expect the kind of split that we saw.
And he's not like a little change of pace back either.
Yeah. No, exactly. He's not Brandon Oliver. You know, he's a guy that is definitely capable of handling, you know, a number one running back's workload. So it'll be very interesting to see how this shakes out. You know, ideally, if you're the Packers, you want to get Eddie Lacy going. But if James Starks is playing like he was on Sunday, I don't think you necessarily have a problem with him being the featured guy if he has to. But I think we're a long way from that really being the case on a consistent basis.
And, you know, as long as they, like, are committed to Eddie Lacy, I think that it's in their best interest to have him, you know, in top form, you know, let's say week 13, 14, you know, that when it gets really cold as the playoffs approach, you know, you want that tough runner there. And
exactly. I think they'll both have a role when the games start to really count later in the season. The Minnesota Vikings at Detroit, another interdivision battle, as we just talked about the Giants and the Cowboys
probably
going at it.
Thanksgiving preview. I don't know if it is, but
I think the Packers play on Thanksgiving, oh, yeah? don't they? Isn't the Brett Favre Ring of Honor induction going on in Thanksgiving? Never I don't know. You're not a Green Bay, a Green Bay guy, so you don't care about this stuff.
Yeah, I just
stuff
know
as
Detroit
do,
plays.
Yes, I think
and
they,
Dallas.
Historically, they've been known to do that. But the Vikings are at Detroit. Noon game, AP limited Wednesday with a finger injury. I assume that's not going to be much of a bother to him. And Charles Johnson back at practice Wednesday. He had a rib injury.
Yeah, not much to talk about there other than the fact that Adrian Peterson, while staying healthy, has not really been a consistent fantasy producer. But, I think he'll pick it up as the season goes along there.
All right, the Detroit Lions. They're home against Minnesota, as we just said. Again, that's a noon game. Joik Bell practiced in full Wednesday. He's missed the last three games. Eric Ebron was limited Wednesday. He hasn't played since week four. Theo Riddick limited Wednesday. A guy who's been really sucking up quite a few targets in the passing game. Kind of the new Benny Cunningham for this team. Amir Abdullah, not listed on the report. There were kind of rumblings that he came out of that last game with an arm injury. Doesn't sound like that serious at all. But we touched on him a little bit earlier, a guy who's had some fumble issues. So he's kind of in the same vein as Melvin Gordon. You kind of worry with some other backs on this roster if his workload's going to be limited. And then the last guy that we're keeping an eye on for Detroit, Brandon Pettigrew, did not participate on Wednesday. He's coming back from a knee injury.
Yeah, that backfield is it's just a big headache right now. You know, Riddick is just involved enough to, you know, devalue Abdullah and Bell when he does play. Although he does present some value in PPR leagues there. Abdullah just, I've mentioned that I like his upside, you know, in open space there. But he apart from, you know, a handful of plays there, he just hasn't gotten it going. And, part of it's the fumbling deal there. Bell in the past is kind of one of those guys that you just kind of consistently write off. And even though I'm not, like, excited about him in any lineups this week, it'll be interesting to see how many touches he gets in his probable return there. Detroit needs to mix some things up, so who knows, Bell could actually revert to fantasy utility against the odds there. We figured if he was hurt, Abdullah was just gonna take over and never look back, but so far we're not there yet.
All right, the last team in the NFC North, the Chicago Bears, they head into their bye week in week seven. We'll talk about them more in week eight, but Alshon Jeffrey came back in week six after a few weeks off, and he came back in a big way and had a vintage Alshon Jeffrey game, 8 catches, 147 yards, and 1 touchdown, kind of reminding everyone how good he can be when he's healthy, a true number one.
I'm not going to miss the consecutive weeks of every Bears receiver being listed as questionable or a game-time decision. Or something like that. I mean, I think when they come back from their bye next week, they should have a relatively clean injury report there.
All right, let's move down to the NFC South. The New Orleans Saints, they're at Indianapolis in a noon game. The only guy we're keeping an eye on for New Orleans, Marcus Colston, limited Wednesday with a shoulder injury.
Big name, small production this
year.
Yes,
bigger name. Definitely a bigger name than the production that he's given over the last couple of seasons, and an especially slow season this year for the veteran. Missed last week's game with a separated shoulder, limited Wednesday. Sounds like he's questionable. But when I hear the word separated shoulder, I feel like that should be probably a 2-week absence, right?
Yep. I mean, 2-week minimum, 6-week.
I think for me that just might be a career ending. Yeah. I would never play sports again.
I always get excited about talking about dislocated or separated shoulders because that's the one injury that I have an extensive resume on.
Really? And how many times have you separated your shoulder?
Well,
is this a hockey injury?
Under 100, but over 20. I don't know. Probably in the neighborhood of 20 to 30 times over the years.
What?
Yeah.
Is that like doing what?
Football, intramural football, hockey.
Is this
softball,
a common hockey injury?
Volleyball. Sneezing too hard.
Do you just have separation prone shoulders? Doria shoulders.
Well, I don't want to bore the listeners with the details of it, but after the original injury, I probably foolishly rushed back and I played the next week and I hurt it in playing intramural football, but I rushed back and then, next week popped out again and eventually had surgery and stayed in place for a couple of years, but it pops out all the time. I mean, maybe not. Like, I haven't played the contact sports too much lately, but I just know that it's one of those injuries where if you rush back, it's like, you know, a concussion or something like that. If you the closer you are to the injury, the easier it is to aggravate it. Therefore, typically, if it's a partial separation, you need it, you know, at least a couple of weeks. And if it's a full dislocation there, like, it's kind of a, you know, 4 to 6 week minimum there. So in Colson's case, you know, there was fears that it might be structural damage. So, yeah, he's looking pretty iffy this week.
All right, Carolina Panthers, they host Philadelphia again on the Sunday night game. Nothing really to keep an eye on there. Tampa Bay is at Washington in a noon game. Austin Seferian Jenkins, still a non-participant in practice. He hasn't played since week two. They're holding out some hope that maybe he could play. Sounds like maybe week 8 or 9 is a little bit more realistic for him. The Atlanta Falcons, they're at Tennessee in a noon game. Leonard Hankerson, he's limited Wednesday, still dealing with they're listing with a rib/hamstring injury. So two minor ailments, just 5 catches over the last 2 games for him. A guy that kind of broke out and was looking like a true number two behind Julio Jones. Looked like maybe he had supplanted Roddy White in that role. But, you know, maybe it's these hamstring ailments that have been limiting his production over the last couple of weeks. But he's cooled off a little bit.
Yeah, right now it's a little tough to trust either of those guys. I do have a feeling that maybe as the season rolls along, maybe Roddy White will sort of resurface as a useful option. But, you know, so far, last couple of weeks there, he's displayed some signs of life, but definitely not a reliable lineup option now. And as you mentioned, Hankerson cooled off a little bit. Kudos to those who got good value out of him while people are, you know, instinctively keeping White in their lineups and, you know, getting some nice surprising production out of Hankerson.
All right, the NFC West we will talk about here real quickly. Oh, wait, no, we have more notes on the Atlanta Falcons. Roddy White limited on Wednesday. We just
yeah,
touched on him briefly.
You know,
probably a Veterans
we'll
Day
see.
Off maybe
we'll
in,
see,
the,
you know,
in the vein of Antonio Gates.
He's definitely a guy who gets his name on the injury report a lot. But, yeah, like, I don't have a sense that it's anything that's going to imperil his Week 7 availability. But as we just mentioned there, he's a little hard to trust in fantasy right now.
Right. One final positive note, a very positive note for the Atlanta Falcons, Julio Jones not listed on the report for the first time in a few weeks. So sounds like he's finally nearing 100% health. Of course, he hasn't really missed any time. The NFC West will finish out with St. Louis plays host to Cleveland in a noon game. Tavon Austin didn't practice Wednesday. He has a hamstring. Trey Mason did not practice with an ankle. And Lance Kendricks underwent thumb surgery. He's out several weeks. Kendricks was kind of the hero against Seattle in week one, caught that long touchdown that ended up winning them the game.
Former Badger.
Former Badger. Yeah, exactly. I was just about to say that. Former Badger Lance Kendricks. But really, other than that one singular play, he hasn't really been much of a fantasy consideration. Seattle is at San Francisco in the Thursday night game, so short week for them. Tyler Lockett listed as probable with a hip injury, and Marshawn Lynch also listed as probable with
that
hamstring.
Yeah, he only gave up one carry in his return to action this last weekend there, so Lynch is fine. Yeah, you mentioned briefly Trey Mason did not practice, but, like, yeah, Trey Mason, you know, he's really an afterthought now that Gurley is back healthy, and I'm really interested to see, you know, what Gurley can do after, you know, kind of impressive first couple of weeks there. Has had some time to rest, and yeah, it's going to be very exciting to see what he does.
Are you familiar with the, I hope that I'm doing this justice, I think they're in maybe 80s, 90s, maybe more 90s, De La Soul?
Yep.
The Raptors.
Rumors of the Heart.
Trey Mason's father is in De La Soul.
Oh, nice.
I don't really know what De La Soul has sung or done.
I think,
but
I just told you their big hit. I think it's like Rumors of the Heart or something like that. And they have like a...
Oh, do they have a song called like Me, Myself, and I?
I
think they
I'm
did.
I'm not sure, but like they have that
it was
album
on an
cover
NCAA
that looks
video
like
game.
A Twister or something like that, you know, with the flowers and stuff.
Yes. Yes, that is very accurate.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Do I know my 80s album art or what?
Well, what genre are they? Are they considered rap or more like funk? I know the one song that I know from that NCAA football, I think it's like 06 video game, was more of a funkier.
I mean, they were funky pop, I guess. I don't know. They cheerful, popular, record-selling band there for a while. Yeah, it's like, so would you say is, what's the relation again?
Trey Mason's dad is a member of De La Soul.
Well, that's the most interesting, relative since Justin Fargus, the Raiders running back, whose dad portrayed Huggy Bear in Starsky and Hutch, the TV show.
No way.
Yeah.
I was not aware of that. All right, let's finish out with a couple more NFC West teams. The 49ers, as we just said, they play on Thursday against Seattle. They're the host team there. Reggie Bush listed as probable. Vernon Davis listed as probable. Davis missed the last two games before the win over Baltimore this past Sunday. Anquan Boldin, questionable. He's been limited the last 2 days with a hamstring. And Carlos Hyde, maybe the most fantasy relevant of all these guys, also listed as questionable with a foot injury.
I mean, Hyde is questionable, but it sounds like he's probably going to go. Reggie Bush is a guy that you just, you know, can't really trust until he does something. Vernon Davis, we mentioned him earlier, but, you know, he did return last week, but out of all three tight ends that were targeted for the 49ers last week, Vance McDonald was the only one to catch a pass and caught one pass for 10 yards. And, you know, Vernon Davis at one point was just, you know, top tier tight end. And whether or not he's, you know, experienced any, you know, reduction in explosiveness or speed, or it's just the offense and, you know, not being on the same page. But, yeah, a guy that at one point seemed like a pretty reliable tight end option is now kind of an afterthought.
Yeah, I think, you know, his age and all those miles maybe starting to catch up to him. We'll finish out with the Arizona Cardinals. They're the Monday night host team against Baltimore. And the only name we're really looking at here is Darren Fells, likely out 2 to 3 weeks with a shoulder injury.
Yeah, you know, it's been a tough year to be a tight end named Fells. And, Darren, he's gonna be out for a little while, but not really a fantasy factor too much, and, you know, kind of a bye week plug-in kind of guy. And, you know, Andre Ellington is back, but, you know, Chris Johnson is still seeing a lot of carries there. So that's a backfield that we want to watch the rest of the year, you know, because David Johnson is around too. And we're going to get a chance to focus on them pretty a lot on Monday. And you know, sometimes that's all. It's kind of cool to maybe be able to, you know, like on Sunday, you're just like so scattered watching so many teams. The Cardinals are a team that I really haven't had a chance to just really dig into one of their games. So it'll be interesting to see how they look Monday more than anything, interested in seeing how that backfield looks.
Yeah, I was able to see them against Detroit a couple weeks ago, and, you know, seeing how that Detroit team has turned out through the first third of the season maybe wasn't the best way to get a read on Arizona. That'll do it for us. That's all I have, at least. Thanks for listening to the RotoWire Fantasy Football Podcast. Again, we're brought to you by DraftKings.com. DraftKings is the leader in daily fantasy sports. You can use the promo code RotoWire when you make your first deposit, and that'll get you a free contest entry on DraftKings today.
Napa know-how.
A Napa guy knows that by the foot, there's no better ride than an old station wagon. Room for 6 people facing forward, 2 people facing backward, and a whole lot of luggage, lumber, and bicycles haphazardly strapped to the roof. If you can parallel park that beast, you can park anything. And with some quality parts and a little Napa know-how, you can keep your land ship running longer, stronger. It's not obsolete. It's a rare treasure. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
Everyone is talking about magnesium. It's all you hear about. But why? What do we know about magnesium? Well, magnesium is the number one mineral that 75% of Americans are deficient in. If you are a woman over 35, magnesium will help you rediscover balance, energy, and vitality. Magnesium supports more than 300 enzymatic reactions in your body, including those involved in hormonal balance. From functional medicine doctors to mental well-being and female hormone experts, we all know that magnesium is the one mineral to improve all aspects of well-being and health. But which one? Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, the trusted choice recommended by leading experts, with 7 best-absorbed forms of magnesium to ensure your body receives the support it needs for overall well-being. Go to bioptimizers.com/balance today and use code BALANCE10 for 10% off. Support your journey to wellness at bioptimizers.com/balance. Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, your foundation to optimal health and vitality.